America enters the war and turns the tide. On Sunday morning, December 7, 1941, planes from the Japanese carriers in the Pacific bombed the U.S. naval and air bases at Pearl Harbor in Hawaii. 19 American ships were sunk or disabled. Nearly 200 planes were destroyed. More than 2,000 men were killed, and more than 1,000 more were wounded. The treacherous surprise attack prompted Roosevelt to address Congress the next day, requesting a declaration of war. He called December 7, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. Congress declared war. The Senate vote was 82-0, and the House vote was 388-1, with Janet Rankin casting the only nay vote. These events thrust America into a worldwide conflict that became known as World War II. Germany and Italy, who with Japan made up the Rome-Berlin-Tokyo axis, was also declared war on the United States. No longer neutral, America became directly involved in a fight against all of the Axis powers, equipping America to fight. The damage inflicted by the Japanese was severe. The silver lining in the dark cloud of the attack was that the American carrier fleet was at sea that morning and had escaped the attack. Those carriers and their weapons would haunt Japan in the coming days. Still, the United States had much to do to prepare itself for the long fight ahead. Manpower to wage the war. Anger and patriotism swept the nation. Volunteers swarmed Army and Navy recruiting stations. In all, about 16 million Americans, 1 in 11, joined the military. Americans who sincerely believed that war was wrong registered as conscientious objectors and served in the medical corps or in other non-combatant roles. Women also became involved in the war effort in military or civilian jobs. Some served in the Williams Women's Army Corps, the WACS. Others joined the Women's Naval Reserve or the women accepted for voluntary emergency service. The women Air Force service pilots helped to fly aircraft from the factories to the air bases where they were needed. Women were not assigned to combat roles, but they did serve overseas, especially in tasks that freed the men to fight. More women also joined the workforce, taking places of men who were drafted. Posters featuring Rosie the Riveter were used to recruit women to join workforces everywhere. Some women joined the Red Cross. Others worked with the USO, the United Service Organizations, entertaining troops and providing other services. Black Americans joined the workforce in larger numbers than ever before. Jobs that were closed to them before suddenly opened. Blacks also enlisted in the all-black units in the armed forces. While African Americans were provided with some increased opportunities during World War II, Americans of Japanese ancestry, even those born in the United States, were rounded up and moved to internment camps. That forced relocation proved to be an overreaction prompted by fear and suspicion. However, this fear was not based on any facts. The government had no indication that Americans of Japanese descent were going to be disloyal. Yet as a result of this policy, most Japanese Americans lost their jobs. Japanese farmers lost their produce, and Japanese merchants were forced to sell their stores at low prices. All were stripped of their rights as American citizens. Beginning on February 1, 1943, Japanese Americans could enlist for military service too. They trained as an all-NISL American-born Japanese force. Yet because of their Japanese ancestry and lingering doubts about their loyalties, most Nisi fought in Europe. A few Japanese Americans did intelligence work in the Pacific. They helped crack the secret Japanese telegraph codes. Material to fight the war. The United States entered the war without enough materials or preparation, but Americans rose to meet the challenge. They soon retooled factories to produce war goods. For example, auto plants converted to producing jeeps and tanks. People worked as teams and sacrificed for the war effort. They doubled production in less than 4 years. By 1945, American industry had produced more than 300,000 planes. It had built 100,000 tanks and self-propelled guns and 2.5 million military trucks. American industry cranked out 1.1 million rifles and cabernets, 400,000 artillery weapons, and 50 billion rounds of ammunition. Shipbuilders set to work to increase the United States naval and merchant marine fleets. They built ships dubbed Liberty ships at the rate of one every 3.5 working days. Those ships carried war material to the far-flung fronts. Aircraft carriers, destroyers, submarines, and other vessels also were built with amazing speed. To meet the ever-increasing need for war material, Americans at home had to sacrifice during the war. After 1942, automobiles were no longer made for private sale. Gasoline, oil, meat, butter, sugar, coffee, shoes, and most canned or frozen goods were rationed or restricted in use because of shortages. Americans received books of rationed stamps. They could buy a rationed item only if they had an unused stamp for it. When the scarce products were available in stores, there were often long lines to buy them. Little was thrown away. drives to collect tin cans, waste paper, aluminum, and scrap iron to aid the war effort became common. Many Americans added to their food supply by planting victory gardens in backyards, along edges of parking lots, in zoos and parks, and in window boxes. By 1943, these gardens supplied Americans with a third of all their vegetables. Those efforts ensured that more food was available for the men fighting in the war. Americans also bought war bonds to help pay for the war effort. The supply lines used to carry goods to the armed forces stretched around the globe. In addition to supplying its own force, the United States supplied much of the Allied forces. President Roosevelt called the United States the arsenal of democracy. Mapping the strategy of the war. As commander-in-chief of all the American armed forces, the president mapped the country's overall war strategy. He sought help from leading military officers and advisors. Roosevelt also met with Churchill. They had their first meeting secretly aboard an American destroyer off the coast of Newfoundland in August of 1941, before the United States had joined in the war. Later talks near Washington, D.C. made public the Allied leaders' Hitler-first policy. That made the Allies' first priority the defeat of Nazi Germany. The United States agreed that the Germans were the biggest threat to the Allies. Once Hitler was defeated, they would focus on defeating Japan. In other meetings, Allied leaders discussed their military strategy and how to deal with the problems they would face after the war. At Casablanca in Morocco in January 1943, the Allies decided to invade Europe through Sicily and Italy. Adolf Hitler turned against the Soviet Union. That country joined the Allies. Therefore, at the next meeting in Tehran, Iran, Stalin joined the meetings. With the fall of France and the end of the Battle of Britain, most of the fighting was taking place in the east between the Germans and the Soviets. Stalin pressed the Allies to invade Northern Europe to take pressure off his troops. The Allies promised Stalin a second European front. In return, Stalin promised that the Soviet Union would help defeat Japan once the Allies had defeated Hitler. Waging the war in Europe. The United States did not ignore events in the Pacific, but it sent its major forces and equipment into the European theater of conflict first, invading North Africa. Before Germany invaded Russia, Italy launched a major campaign in the deserts of North Africa. The British, however, defeated the Italians and threatened to drive them out of Africa altogether. To prop up his faltering ally, Hitler sent his Africa Corps to Africa. It was under the brilliant command of General Erwin Rommel, the Desert Fox. By clever maneuvering and swift movement, Rommel drove back the British. It seemed that he would drive all the way into Egypt and capture the Suez Canal. The battle lines at North Africa shifted back and forth for hundreds of miles in 1941 and 1942, as first Rommel and then the British were victorious. By the middle of 1942, however, American troops began to arrive in Europe. They were commanded by General Dwight D. Eisenhower. He guided Operation Torch, the Americans' invasion in northwestern North Africa, and began to push east toward Libya. Meanwhile, the British drove west from Egypt. The Allies crushed the Axis forces between them. Rommel and some of his men escaped to Europe. The 240,000 Axis troops surrendered to the Allies in Tanzania in May 1943. Invading Mediterranean Europe. Although Hitler had not lost in North Africa, he was determined to keep Fortress Europe, the lands that the Reich had conquered in Europe. He expected any Allied assault to come across the English Channel into France, but the Allies under American General George Patton launched Operation Husky. First, they invaded Sicily, the large island off the tip of Italy. American troops under General Mark Clark and British troops under General Bernard Montgomery then invaded Italy at Anzio and Salerno. Working their way up the Italian coast, the Americans captured Naples in October 1943, but the push to take Rome was slowed by the Germans, who were entrenched in the mountains. It took the Allies 4 months to travel through Italy's snow-clad mountains. Italian citizens were tired of war. They overthrew Mussolini, surrendered to the Allies, and declared war on Germany. American forces freed Rome on June 4, 1944. Fighting continued against German forces in northern Italy for another year. The Allied plan called for opening yet another front. Eisenhower began working in Britain to prepare for a bigger invasion. American generals Omar Bradley and George Patton and British general Bernard Montgomery assisted Eisenhower in the planning. They would invade Germany through northern France in what was called Operation Overlord. They assembled men and equipment in southern England while bombing Germany around the clock. The British conducted night raids over German cities, destroying 2.5 cities per month. The American Air Force bombed by day, focusing on industrial and military sites. invading France. In the pre-dawn hours of June 6, 1944, Allied paratroopers and soldiers in gliders began landing in behind German lines in Normandy, France. At the same time, the German amphibious invasion force in history, the largest amphibious invasion force in history, moved across the English Channel toward the beaches of Normandy, 20 miles away. This was D-Day, the day for Operation Overlord to begin. Eisenhower announced by radio, "The tide has turned. The free men of the world are marching together to victory." It marked the beginning of the end of the war in Europe. The Allied air forces provided air protection. American soldiers landed on beaches codenamed Utah and Omaha. The British landed on other nearby beaches codenamed Juno, Gold, and Sword. German defenses were strong and Allied losses were heavy. But the Allies had established a beachhead. They pushed inland yard by yard and mile by mile across some of the same ground fought over in World War I. On August 25th, after a grueling three-month battle, the Allies liberated Paris. German resistance collapsed rapidly after that. By October, the Allies had advanced all the way to the Rhine River. But in mid-December, the Germans suddenly launched a huge counterattack into Belgium in an attempt to recapture the strategic port of Antwerp and divide the Allied forces. Although the Germans did not succeed in taking the port, they did succeed in pushing the Allied line 60 miles westward at one point. That bulge in the line allowed the Germans to surround an American division in the Belgian town of Bagstone. Other Allied forces rushed to rescue the trapped forces who were fighting desperately in the Battle of the Bulge. After a month of battle in snow and severe cold, the German demanded that the Americans surrender. The general of the surrounded American division, Anthony McCaffrey, sent back his response, "Nuts." The fighting continued, but the German attack began to falter. The American troops reached the beleaguered soldiers in Bagstone and started pushing the Germans back toward Germany again. German defeat. While the Allies fought northward from Italy and eastward from the Rhine, the Soviets fought their way westward towards Berlin. The American forces probably could have won the race with the Russians to arrive at Berlin first, but a political decision forced them to delay. The Russians were to be allowed to take Berlin. The Americans and British concentrated on capturing Nazi forces and liberating concentration camps in western Germany. Another factor that kept the Americans from Berlin was the agreement at the Yalta Conference by FDR, Churchill, and Stalin in February 1945. There they recognized Soviet special interests in Eastern Europe. In return, Stalin promised to enter the Pacific War. He also promised to hold post-war elections in the Eastern European countries the Soviets liberated. The Soviet promises proved worthless, but Roosevelt thought that the agreement was necessary. Churchill had proposed preventing the Soviets from gaining control of any more of Europe than necessary by launching a British-American operation from the central Mediterranean northward. But he was forced to go along. His concern later proved to be valid when Stalin refused to relinquish control of Eastern Europe. At that time, he made his famous declaration that an iron curtain had fallen across Europe. Yalta was the last meeting of Churchill and FDR with Stalin. Within a few months, Roosevelt was dead, and Britain had elected a new prime minister to replace Churchill. Hitler, seeing his Third Reich crumbling before him, committed suicide. 2 days later, on May 2, 1945, Berlin fell to the Russians. On May 7, 1945, the Germans surrendered at a schoolhouse near Reims. An elated world paused briefly to celebrate VE Day, or victory in Europe, on May 8. American efforts then turned to finishing off the Japanese in the Pacific.